If you don't sit in your lucky seat, your team could lose. So don't leave your lucky seat. But do pick up your phone or computer and order B-dubs to go. Or if you've got a big group, call in for the party menu. That way you can order wings, pick them up, and get back to your lucky seat. And if you do lose while sitting in your lucky seat, you can still feel lucky eating your feelings. Spicy feelings. Keep your superstitions. We do it for you. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Prices and participation vary. See participating locations for details. Void where prohibited.
Chris Stone of The Step Back joins me, and we spend the beginning, per usual, going over general draft evaluation stuff. Then we pick apart his top five. The second half of the pod is spent descending into the Lauri Markkanen rabbit hole, where we thoroughly flesh out his offensive and defensive profiles. I've been sitting on this conversation for a couple of weeks now, and I'm really, really excited to release it because I think Chris is really insightful. But because it is not hot off the press, a few of Chris's views about his top five might have changed, so keep that in mind. This podcast is part of the expansive Almighty Baller Podcast Network, and it's brought to you by GlassesUSA.com, where you can get 55% off any pair of glasses with the Almighty promo code. And now, Chris Stone.
All right, welcome back, guys, to Ode to Odin, the NBA Draft Podcast. I'm Sean Darenthal, your host, and I'm joined by another great guest, Chris Stone from Fansided and The Step Back. Chris, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Of course, man. How are you doing tonight?
Good, good. I want to start out with the same question that I pretty much ask all of you guys. You are as much a college basketball guy as I think I've had on the show so far. Obviously, you do a lot in the NBA draft too, but would it be safe to say that your main focus is kind of college basketball?
Yeah, I think when I started writing as a grad school, in grad school at Kansas, and I kind of did it because I didn't like most of the people outside of the beat writers who were covering Kansas.
Yeah.
And then I kind of just started rolling that into more and more college basketball stuff and stumbled my way into draft coverage, writing about Cliff Alexander in a guest post for Upside and Motor, because he was kind of like a super controversial figure at Kansas because he was a really good college basketball player. But he couldn't get on the floor for Bill Self for whatever reason. Like, he forgot plays and did all this stuff, but his stats were totally crazy.
Yeah. I was going to say, he was a great one to get your feet wet as far as NBA draft. And I was going to say that sarcastically, but actually you make a great point. And he was a really, really interesting prospect.
Yeah. He was a super good college basketball player, but he was like 6'10" and like not particularly well suited, I think, to translate to the NBA. So I wrote a piece that was like, I really like Cliff Alexander as a college basketball player. I think he's super talented. He can do a bunch of good things, but I'm not sure how well that's going to translate to the NBA. And then I kind of got asked to do some more stuff over there and just sort of stumbled my way into the NBA draft stuff and kind of really enjoyed it and have fun doing it. I do a mock draft every week that's pretty challenging and interesting. So it's obviously something I enjoy.
Yeah, if you're not checking that out every week, definitely do so. Chris is, I think, one of the more insightful guys. Try to find his pieces on Fansided. Of course, we'll plug your stuff later on. one of the first things that I read of yours, well, you know, that's actually not true. It was once I was kind of really, really entrenched in your work and I would read everything almost immediately as soon as you posted it. I read Josh Jackson, that piece that you did about him and his rim protection, which was really, really interesting. And so it got me kind of thinking about your evaluation style, like how you saw that specific trait. So maybe you could just summarize your evaluation process. Which traits do you kind of look for? How do you watch games when you're evaluating these guys? You know, which traits are more and less valuable for you as an NBA, you know, looking for NBA prospects, that kind of thing?
Sure. I think one of the things I'm always concerned with is how a certain player is going to fit within the NBA. So I think that even goes back to the Cliff Alexander stuff, is just what is their role and what can they offer in modern NBA systems? I think that's super important. And I think a lot of people in particular start to fall in love with like big men and stuff like that. And I've been trying to get out of that system just because post-ups are so much less relevant and things like that. And so I think one of the things I'm concerned with is just where does somebody fit in the NBA? And even if they're super talented, how important is the skill that they're talented at? In terms of watching games, I try to watch as many as I can. I probably should watch more of them. than I do right now, but I think that's probably true for everybody.
Yeah, of course.
And I try just to take notes as I'm watching. I watch a ton of college basketball, and so when I can, I try to watch as many prospects as possible and just take notes on those guys as I'm kind of paying attention to what else is happening in terms of those storylines.
So the thing that you talked about, trying to understand prospects first as a fit to the NBA and understanding, you know, what their value might be because of, yeah, their fit rather than just their overall college skill set. Someone that jumps out to me right away is John Collins, somebody that kind of on your recent mock drafts has been rising a little bit. And he's someone that I question a lot. Someone that, as far as like NBA fit, I find it hard to see how he's going to be productive. Obviously, you know, nowhere near the kind of productivity that he has now, which is pretty much all he is, right? He's just a bunch of points and a bunch of rebounds. But talk about him more and about his fit in the NBA and how you maybe use him as an example about how you kind of evaluate guys in the NBA mold.
Sure. So I think with him, it's just a question of where he comes off the board. I think some people think of him as like a potential lottery pick eventually because of his statistical production, and I'm not sure that I'm willing to come around to that yet.
Yeah.
But it does seem feasible that if he's available late in the first, he seems kind of like a safe bet to at least be a rotation big man who can come off the bench, give you energy, grab rebounds, put up some buckets, either in pick and roll or as a post-up guy. And that, I think, is super valuable. I think one thing that people get caught up in draft evaluation is just looking for guys who are going to hit it out of the park and become superstars and stuff. And obviously that's super important. But if someone's kind of average outcome is really valuable rotation piece, then I think that person is probably worth a first round pick. And I think as you, in this draft in particular, start to get past kind of the lottery, you don't run into a lot of guys that have really great upside necessarily, but you get a bunch of guys who I think are really nice pieces who might fit somewhere. And I think that Collins at least has the ability to fit somewhere and will likely do so with a pretty high probability. So I think pretty good answer,
just in
terms of how I think he can fit in the NBA. But I don't think he's going to be like a stud necessarily. I just think he's going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I think that that's one of kind of the missions of this podcast, like you said, is to help temper expectations for people past pick 10, probably actually past even pick 5, honestly. We're so kind of blinded by the cliche of, a first round draft pick and somebody who's really productive. And even sometimes to the extent of somebody who's just a creator, somebody who can kind of create their own shot. And we see that as being so, so valuable, and we dismiss a lot of other things. I think we're a little bit blinded by that. And I think you're right about Collins being able to have some other skills I don't think he's going to be a creator either. I don't see him exactly maybe at the same level that you do. I think maybe someone in that mold who's going to get his points off cuts and offensive rebounds probably needs a little bit of a higher motor and a little bit higher of an IQ. And I think that usually that player also gives you a lot on defense, which I'm not sure that he will. I don't know exactly what position he defends. So we don't have to go down that train. But so as you're doing this, and as I've been doing this recently, I've noticed that the way that I do it has been changing a lot. I read smart guys like you. You know, I watch more and more. I devote more and more of my time to this. And I realized that kind of the things that I'm valuing are definitely changing. I'm leaning toward certain traits. Are you leaning toward any traits recently? Is there anything that's kind of stuck out to you as being maybe more or less important? Any kind of changes in the way that you're evaluating these guys?
Well, I think some of that just goes back to some of my overall stuff, which is how guys fit in the modern NBA. So stuff that I think has become more prominent probably even in the last like 2 years that are 3 years or whatever I've been doing some of this, are just things like versatility, how important shooting is. If you can't shoot, what can you do in terms of handling the ball and facilitating an offense? And so I guess I'm always just looking for traits that translate in some way or another. Obviously, I think like everybody's looking to see if somebody's athletic, if there are physical attributes that are particularly important and how those can translate. So I think like we're going to talk about Miles Bridges, some of his physical attributes might be kind of questionable for the role that people expect him to play, for example. And so, you know, just in terms of traits that have become more important to me, it's all the stuff that I think has become more important in the NBA game. And that's a place where I'm kind of focusing more attention and finding who I think is good.
I like that a lot. So let's just take your personal top five or top 10 or whatever you feel comfortable giving us. I know that you do your step back mock draft with somebody else, right? Is that Trevor Magnetti? How do you pronounce his name?
Yeah, Trevor Magnetti.
Yeah,
I do a joint big board with him, which is kind of interesting because we get to bounce feedback and ideas. And I think we're generally a little more conservative than other places in terms of willingness to move people up just because we want to see them do stuff for more than like 10 games at a time. but I think that my personal top five tracks pretty closely with that board. I think just like about everybody else, I would have Markelle Fultz number one. I don't think that requires too much explanation.
Yeah.
I have Josh Jackson second. I really just kind of like what he's good at for his position. I don't think you find a lot of people who can create and handle the ball and pass like he can from the wing position, even if he's not a great shooter. And quite frankly, he's like become a decent catch and shoot guy during conference play, which is totally insane. I think that the Kansas staff actually does a really good job developing guys' jump shots. Like Sviatoslav Mikhailiuk, for as much as people talk about him being a shooter when he came to college, it just that wasn't true. He was not a good shooter, and now he's a really good shooter.
Yeah.
But in terms of what Jackson brings in terms of creation ability and versatility on defense, I think is super important and just a little more of an outlier in those positions than some of the guys who come right after him.
So Jackson, recently I've been questioning a little bit his creation. He's been forced into a few times in the past month or two maybe, where he's had to create a little bit off the dribble. Obviously, he's a great passer. I think he's really creative. And in the role that he's had off of Graham and off of Mason, he's been incredible as a creator, as a ball mover, as attacking, moving defenses, that kind of thing. But yeah, as an initial creator, when he's not being guarded by a college four, I think that sometimes he struggles a little bit to create a little bit of separation with the dribble. Do you think that's fair?
I think that's probably fair. I don't know that his handle is the cleanest yet in terms of just breaking away from guys. I don't think he's gotten a lot of opportunities either at Kansas to like run pick and roll, which I think is something that could help create some separation. Actually,
yeah,
the place
that's a good point.
I've kind of ranted about this a lot in terms of college basketball writing, but the place where I think he's most interesting is as a screener in high ball screens. And I think they've only run like 20 possessions of this or something all year. But when he screens in high ball screens, they're really effective. And it's obviously, this is like sacrilegious to compare it to it, but it's really similar to the way that Golden State used to use Draymond Green in ball screen actions, where they'd set a screen with him and then have him pop out and then give him the ball. And you'd kind of have him going downhill 4-on-3, yeah, where his handle matters a little bit less, but his passing ability matters a ton.
Right.
And on some occasions, he can kind of catch and shoot out of those spots. And I think that's a really interesting potential set that can translate to the NBA that Kansas doesn't use enough, and they might use a lot in the tournament. But when they played Kentucky, for example, they like absolutely destroyed Kentucky running Frank Mason, Josh Jackson pick and rolls and just like popping him out to the 3-point line, giving him the ball and either letting him attack off the dribble or in catch and shoot spots, where he's been pretty decent this year.
Yeah, I like that. I'll have to look for that a little bit more. Okay, so after Jackson, who do you have?
So after Jackson, I think it's a really tight race between Dennis Smith and Lonzo Ball. And I flip-flop between the two of them pretty regularly. I think previously we had Dennis Smith third on our big board, and then we went to Lonzo Ball. And I think personally I might still be on Dennis Smith right now just because I think that his ceiling is a little bit higher if he lives up to some of the athleticism and if all of that translates really well. And I think that you can plug him in more systems maybe than you can plug Lonzo. Like, I think if you gave a team to Dennis Smith and said, take over and you're going to be the guy who has the ball all the time and, you know, you're going to take 20 shots a game, I think that he's more suited to do that than Lonzo is, for example. But I think Lonzo fits in a bunch of different places. Like, I think you can play Lonzo off the ball super comfortably because he's a really smart cutter. He's a great catch-and-shoot guy. And I think he maybe has some trouble creating one-on-one that maybe Dennis Smith doesn't have because he's just a little bit quicker and more explosive.
Yeah.
So I think right now I'd have Dennis Smith 3 just because I think the upside is a little bit higher, but it's super close with Lonzo, who I would have 4 right now.
Yo, everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group, just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Okay, you probably don't know this necessarily, but I think Dennis Smith Jr. is probably going to be a kind of a disappointment at the NBA level. I don't know that he does much off the ball, like if anything, on either end of the court to be very valuable, because I'm not sure that his decision making is good enough to be like a starting primary creator, or even maybe like a secondary creator on a good team in the NBA. So for me, I mean, I understand, you know, the third pick in the draft, the fourth pick in the draft, taking a chance on somebody like this, I'm not going to kill anybody for that, obviously. So what is the gap, do you think, between Jackson and these next two guys? Are they pretty close, or do you think it's pretty sizable?
So I think that I thought early on Jackson was pretty significantly ahead of those guys. Like, I thought it was like Markelle Fultz gap, Josh Jackson gap, and then kind of Smith and Ball.
Yeah.
I would say that gap has probably closed a little bit, just because I think, like you said, Jackson's one-on-one game has regressed a little bit, although he's added some of the catch-and-shoot stuff that we'll see if it sticks around. So I think it's probably closed a little bit. I don't think it's super far off in terms of, you know, it is in my mind closer than Fultz and the field.
Yeah. If Jackson's shooting is real, which I mean, is a huge, huge if.
Yeah, huge if.
Then that gap gets huge, right? Like you said, it's Fultz, giant gap, Jackson, giant gap, and then I think everybody else. But
and even if he's only a catch and shoot guy, like I don't know that he's ever going to be a good off the dribble shooter. But if he can shoot a reasonable percentage on catch and shoots, like, he's really dangerous offensively.
Yeah, super. Yeah, like, really, really important offensive cog, right? Because, like you said, if he can catch and shoot, he can help you space. And the passing that he has, and he's definitely got a good enough handle left or right, probably maybe sometimes better left, attacking closeouts, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
He just becomes an amazing secondary creator for sure. Okay, so then quickly after those four, who do you have to round out your top five?
Sure. So the last guy in my top five would be Jonathan Isaac, who I think is just really interesting. You know, I think at worst you're going to get a 7-footer who can shoot threes and defend multiple positions, which is super valuable.
Mm-hmm.
At best, if he is more aggressive and develops a bit more of a handle, you might get an even better kind of creator on offense than you would expect.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of potential there. I went off on Isaac for a really long time with Jay-Z, so I don't need to necessarily go into it. But yeah, I think pretty clearly he's like the fifth best prospect, and I think there's nobody else. Like, he rounds out the top five pretty cleanly, I think. Is there anybody else for you that's knocking on that door, or is the gap there pretty big too?
I feel like that's pretty clearly my top five right now. Somebody I've been down on and I'm still not super hyped about is Jason Tatum. But I think that if his three-point shooting sustains over the rest of the year, I think you can make an argument for him to make his way back into the top five, just as an isolation scorer. I don't really like the way that he fits on a bunch of teams because I think he is such an isolation and mid-range heavy player. But I think if he like actually shoots close to 40% from three, then you have an argument. But before these last two games, he was shooting 32% from three, which is kind of a fun with college basketball sample sizes thing that I think people forget about. Now he's a 39% three-point shooter after two games.
Yeah.
But if he sustains more of that over more attempts, his free throw numbers are good enough. Maybe he kind of knocks on the top five, but I think I'm pretty clearly set right now in those five guys.
So do you think that Tatum's three-point shot, while kind of a question mark this season, like you're saying, do you think that it's at least projectable? Because that's kind of where I stand, where I think this guy's shown so many skills. I feel pretty confident. I'm confident enough projecting any skill that we project, you know, to the NBA, which is obviously hazy. But projecting his three-point shot there, I actually feel pretty comfortable doing it. Do you think that's kind of fair, or do you think I should back off?
Yeah, I think that's totally fine. His free throw numbers are super good. I think he just has questions about how quickly he can translate it. And I think it's just his comfort level with being a three-point shooter is in question because of how much he likes to operate in the mid-range. Most of what I I dislike about Tatum is just how he fits in an NBA that likes to pass the ball a lot and move the ball around the offense. And I feel like he's kind of a dude who gets the ball in the mid post. The other four guys go to the opposite side of the floor, and then like Tatum does his thing.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a really attractive quality. I think one of my favorite – I like to play around with KenPom's comparables, which compares seasons statistically. And, like, two of the top three comparisons for Tatum are Andrew Wiggins and Carmelo Anthony, like two guys who get roasted by NBA Twitter.
Yeah.
But also, like, people still think Tatum is, like, the super sweet draft prospect. And it's like, he's the guy you all hate.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. For some reason, I give him a pass. I don't know why, because – when I go back in my memory bank of all of the high school things that I've seen him in, of course, you know, he's exactly those kind of guys in terms of usage and you know, assist percentage and that kind of thing. For some reason, I give him a pass. I don't put him in that kind of category because maybe you see flashes of the passing. He doesn't seem like the same kind of ball stopper. Carmelo is in like a stratosphere all by himself, right? As a ball stopper.
Yeah.
And you almost see, I mean, this is probably unfair. We're going like armchair psychology here, but he seems a little bit like, I don't know. It's kind of like an ego thing for him or maybe
sure.
like a basketball intelligence thing for him. And Andrew Wiggins, I think it's pretty clearly like a basketball intelligence kind of thing. Like there's something there that he's just not getting, but Jason Tatum, I think shows enough of the ability to pass, like enough of keeping his eye up as he's dribbling. I don't know. I've been giving him a pass, but I think you're right. Maybe I should go back and evaluate a little bit more.
Yeah.
Maybe just look at the evidence that I'm giving instead of extrapolate a little bit too much.
And I don't necessarily think that's unfair or anything, because I think that, you know, he's obviously younger than those two guys. There's some ability to project that he's going to get better. And when we're looking at draft prospects, we're always hoping for the best. I think you're right that Tatum throws some passes that are really nice and clearly hint at the fact that he's capable of doing it. But in the same way that I think Malik Monk throws some of those passes,
yeah.
It's just like, are you going to do it on a consistent basis? I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And something also tells me that when Carmelo was projected to the NBA and obviously, you know, in his schemes now, we know that his entire career, he has been the scorer, the number one offensive option. Also Andrew Wiggins, while maybe Towns should be that, sometimes kind of his usage percentage and kind of the way that he's used in that pretty rudimentary offense there in Minnesota, he's often their kind of number one option. Whereas Tatum, I don't think he will be that at the NBA level. For some reason, I just think, hey, once he gets an NBA coach that says, you can't do this, you know, I give you the green light on this, this, and this shot, you know, otherwise you're passing, you're our third option or fourth option, then he'll be kind of forced out of that role. And the other qualities will have to come forward. But I mean, again, that's me kind of just extrapolating. You know, maybe that decision making will never be there and he will just jack shots. He'll be, you know, a Muhammad who thinks he's maybe thinks he's still kind of the first option like he's been his entire life. All right, let's move on. That's probably too much time. We're already about at the half hour mark. So let's go to somebody besides the four guys that we're going to really go in depth about.
Sure.
Lauri Markkanen, Miles Bridges, Zach Collins, who I'm excited to get to, and Jared Allen. Besides those four guys, who else is in this draft that's not talked about in kind of, you know, the upper half of the lottery that you really like?
So I think the person that a lot of draft Twitter likes is somebody I like as well, which is Mikal Bridges from Villanova. He's super efficient. He's, I think, a pretty good 3-and-D prospect. I think it's fair to have some questions about how he moves, if he's too straight up and too stiff, but like, he has freaky physical tools. He's a solid athlete, does basically everything defensively, and seems to have found a reasonable and consistent three-point shot, which is obviously super valuable. I don't know that I'm to the point where I would take him in the middle of the first round yet, partially because I don't even know that he's going to leave school. But he's somebody who I really like and I think more highly of than I think the general public consensus probably does.
All right. Is there anybody else? I like that one.
I don't know that I have anybody else off the top of my head. I really like Justin Patton, but I think kind of everybody's come around on Justin
Patton.
Yeah.
Is there anybody that you're down on relative to kind of the consensus?
Okay. The one recently that I've become pretty down on is Bam Adebayo. And I think for a lot of the similar reasons that I was down on Cliff Alexander translating to the NBA are reasons I'm down on Adebayo translating to the NBA.
Yeah, the fit issue,
which is that,
right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's a 6'10" center who has the size of a power forward but a center's skill set. Yeah. And I don't really know how great that I think that translates. Like, the guys who are 6'10 or smaller in the NBA who play center have freakishly long wingspans and great athleticism, and I don't know that Bam has either of those. He's a really bad defensive rebounder. His block rate is okay, but it's not exceptional. And so,
yeah, guys in his mold need the IQ, like the motor, the defensive instincts, right? Like you said, basically, he doesn't have any of those things.
His motor is pretty good. He runs the floor really well, but just I just think that the likelihood that he translates is kind of low.
All right, yeah, I think I agree on you there, which is kind of boring, but I guess good too. From the mouth of two, right? So, okay, let's get to the main event here. Lauri Markkanen, if you don't know who he is yet, you've been living under an NBA draft rock, but just in case anybody's listening to this for the first time and we're baptizing them right now into NBA draft talk, Lauri Markkanen, a Finnish freshman 7-footer playing for Arizona right now, is taking the most shots on their team, is just an offensive first player. He's a little bit older of a freshman than the rest of these guys in this class. He's going to be 20 by the time the draft rolls around. He's, you know, a very polished offensive player, lacks some of the athleticism, and has most of his questions, I think, come on the defensive end. So let's get into it. We're going to go offensive strengths, offensive weaknesses, defensive strengths, defensive weaknesses, and a little bit of a back and forth here. I'm going to let Chris do most of the heavy lifting and kind of just chime in where maybe I disagree or a few things maybe he didn't hit. All right, so I'm going to give it to you, Chris. Major offensive strengths.
I think any conversation about Markkanen starts and basically ends on offense with his shooting. He's probably the best draft prospect for a 7-footer who's a good shooter maybe in history. He's a ridiculous shooter.
That's not an exaggeration. Motion, quick release. That's definitely in play.
Yeah. Gets it off above everybody. He is unlike other bigs in the NBA who get to the NBA and then kind of add a 3-point shot to their game. Like, he's the first guy that I can think of who's 7 feet tall, who's going to get to the NBA and immediately be a really good 3-point shooter.
Yeah.
And that's super rare. He's made 45.7% of his threes this year on 130 attempts. His peripheral numbers, 84% on free throws, 2.8 makes per 40 minutes, all are fantastic. And he does it in every single possible way that you could consider. So I checked his synergy stats. He's at 1.38 points per possession on catch and shoots, 1.24 on pick and pops, and 1.35 off of screens. Like, he is
unbelievable.
Absolutely ridiculous as a shooter. And
Chris, will you put those numbers into context for us? Like, if the average person listening to this podcast isn't thinking in points per possession or points per play type, what do those numbers like mean? Put them in context.
But before we get to that, I want to confide in you about a personal problem of mine. Even though I wasted too much money on them in high school, and as much as they are the go-to look for a lot of guys, I look super goofy in a hat. I'm not sure if it's maybe my head shape, maybe my big nose, or the non-existent chin that I don't have, but I look truly awful in them. But there's another accessory that's just as common, and actually a flat-out superior accessory because they're usually very practical as well, glasses. Summer's coming, and everyone needs a good pair of sunglasses. And let's face it, we're all getting a little older, and our lens prescriptions probably need to be updated. And that's where GlassesUSA.com comes in. It's like having a giant warehouse of high-quality, name-brand glasses at the lowest prices right at your fingertips. Because it's all online, they cut out all the middlemen from the retailers to the labs, so the prices are excellent. The best part is that if you don't like the glasses you choose within the first couple weeks, 14 days, no questions asked, money back return, plus free shipping. No problem. Of course, this wouldn't be a podcast sponsorship if we didn't give the listeners a special deal and promo code. If you enter the code ALMIGHTY, ALMIGHTY, ALMIGHTY at checkout, you get 55% off any pair of glasses. Go update your glasses game and support this free podcast by using the ALMIGHTY promo code at checkout.
Sure. So obviously each possession can either result in 1, 2, or 3 points. So he averages – I'm trying to think of the best way to do that. How about this? So UCLA has the best adjusted offense in the country, and their adjusted offensive total is 1.26 points per possession, and Markkanen is better than that on catch and shoots, equal to it in pick and pops, and better than it coming off of screens, which I think is pretty decent.
It's it's remarkable, honestly. Like, those numbers are like eye popping. Like they're like insane. Okay, we can move on. I just wanted to make that point because he really is like historical in this.
Yeah, and I don't think. I think that some of the stuff that he does as a 7-foot shooter, like there are not very many 7-foot shooters who come off of screens. Like Arizona runs plays for him where they'll run him to the low block and then pull him up off of a screen to shoot a three from the wing. And I just don't think that you see that very often with somebody by him. So I did a quick search on Basketball Reference before we started of NBA players who have a 3-point rate higher than 40% and are making more than 40% of their threes this year. Mm-hmm. And the only person who's doing it is Thon Maker. And he's only taken 32 threes, and I think Lauri Markkanen will like blow that out of the water.
Yeah, no doubt. That's like all he's going to take in the NBA, probably.
Yeah, and so he's somebody that I'm really high on just because he's such an outlier at shooting at a position where it's unique to be an outlier at shooting.
Yeah. So what else? Like the other strengths that I kind of see, just getting off of the shooting, because we hammered that so hard, although, you know, we definitely had to do that part justice, and that was warranted. I think that his first step isn't bad. Obviously, there are a lot of hard closeouts coming his way. Well, actually, you know what? I'm going to take that back a little bit. That was kind of my initial impression was, he gets a lot of hard closeouts, and that's kind of what I assumed. But he has so much gravity, and they put a defender just on him regardless, and they never leave him. Obviously, you know, that's pretty obvious. Yeah. He's so much of their offense that he doesn't get as many closeouts as you think. But when he does get closeout opportunities, I think that his first step is actually pretty quick. He can take a couple dribbles and get to the rim comfortably and with some coordination. Now, you know, there's problems when we get there, and we'll get there. In the weaknesses, his handle isn't bad. Sometimes it gets a little sped up, I think, but I think he's fine there. The other little thing I think is passing. He doesn't have great coordination. He's not doing a lot of passes out of pick and roll situations, hooks over the top, you know, one-handed bounce passes or anything like that. Anything too impressive, and he doesn't have, you know, great vision. He's not wowing you with those kinds of passes or finding people kind of on the weak side that are slightly open when a defender's head's turned. Something like, he's not doing those kind of things, but as just a simple ball mover, his decisions are so solid and really quick that I think people around him are getting better shots than they would otherwise. He's putting passes in like really good pockets. I'm actually really, really impressed by just kind of the simple but very effective passing that he has, which is going to be important, obviously, because somebody who has so much gravity, he creates that space and those passing lanes and that opportunity for other shooters around him, which I think is only going to be exaggerated at the NBA level. There's a little bit of a problem, I think, right now on his team with some other perimeter shooters. They're not great. So there's kind of like they stick on him and they sag to the middle. Arizona's not like the most aesthetically pleasing offense to watch, especially after you've watched UCLA. But then again, I guess college basketball isn't after you've watched the NBA. So we don't have to go down that road. But offensive weaknesses, unless there's some other offensive strength that I didn't hit that you were kind of thinking of.
No, I think that's right. I think that his decision making is smart. He moves the ball when he needs to. He's not somebody who's going to be a black hole when it comes to moving the ball. He doesn't turn it over very much, which is, you know, if he's just somebody who fits in a nice role as a big dude who shoots, like, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
In terms of weaknesses, I do agree with you that I think he moves the ball really well, but I think you hit on one, which is that he doesn't really create shots for others. There are times when you see him attack a closeout and he'll kind of dump the ball over somebody and drop an assist, but he only has 26 assists in 857 minutes this season, which is 1.2 per 40 minutes, which is like pretty bad.
Yeah.
He's a fine enough athlete and ball handler, but I think you're right that he gets slowed down a little bit. And then I think that there are obvious problems that you probably want to get into pretty deeply, which is that he's not particularly strong or athletic and maybe has some trouble finishing around the rim in some instances.
Yeah. So I'm going to kind of bring up a point and I want you to flesh it out because you've seen probably a lot more of these college basketball games than I have. But when he's playing, like there are two Lauri Markkanens. One when he's guarded by an athletic long four who maybe is athletic and or is strong. It seems like if his defender has one of those two, he's really bothered, and they don't even really need to bring that much help. He just struggles a lot to get any space, although his shot is very quick and it's really versatile, like we've talked a lot about, and he can sometimes get off the dribble okay. He's really, really bothered by that length. If he's guarded by someone a little bit shorter, then, you know, we see the great, super efficient, high usage Lauri Markkanen. But, you know, if he has one of these defenders on him that UCLA can give him, that Oregon can bother him with, that who was the other team that I was watching that really kind of almost shut him down? I forget who it is now, but it's like this thing where I think, okay, almost every defender that he's going to see at the NBA level is this kind of guy. And I just wonder, how is his offense going to translate? Even though he is this great shooter, is he going to get enough of these looks? Like, is anybody going to close out on him with a little bit of hesitation? Because if you bump him a little bit on his drives, he stops. You know, like his athleticism and his speed and his first step,
yeah,
any kind of finish that he looks like he might have at the rim kind of goes away when he's facing anybody with athleticism or strength.
I think that's a totally fair criticism. He doesn't have a lot of isolation plays this year. I think that criticism is true posting him up. He gets bothered by bigger players and kind of pushed off of his spots. But the thing that gets me is while I understand that criticism of him, mm-hmm. and I think that it's an important thing to note, I just don't know how relevant I think it'll be with the role that he's probably going to play in the NBA. Like, I don't think people are going to give him the ball and tell him to put it on the floor all that often. I think if he's going to be putting the ball on the floor, it's going to be against a moving defense. And even if he doesn't get a lot of those opportunities, that means that his defender is going to be out on the perimeter with him and away from the rim, so there's not going to be as much rim protection for the guards that he's playing with, and that gravity becomes more important. I do think, like, it's highly likely he'll be able to get pick and roll opportunities in the NBA. It's highly likely, I think, that he'll be able to run off of screens in the NBA. Like, how many NBA big men are really set up to defend another big guy who's running off of screens regularly? Like, there's probably only a handful of guys in the NBA who run off of screens as big men with the regularity that Markkanen is potentially going to do it at. And so while I understand that there are some criticisms to be made of how well he finishes on offense or how well he attacks closeouts or one-on-one, I just don't know how much I think that will hamper him in the role that he's potentially going to play at the next level.
Hmm. So I think the spacing point that you made is like spot on. Like, that is, I think, the strongest rebuttal to kind of the issues that I was bringing up, especially obviously with the more spacing of the NBA, right? I mean, the three point line is back, you know, a few more feet. And also the Houston Rockets have invented another 3-point line that's 3 feet behind that one, right? Which is probably where Markkanen will stand and immediately be a pretty efficient 3-point shooter from there and can probably only grow in that respect. But as far as running actions for him where he's running around screens, I think I'll push back just a little bit in saying that if that's the case, unless he's playing with a really, really solid lineup, I think you just guard him with a 3 or a 4 in the NBA who can do all that stuff no problem. I mean, it's not as if his, you know, running off screens would be the problem. If you haven't done it before, well, it's one thing if you're trying to guard somebody who's really athletic and really quick. But Markkanen, while he's good at kind of rubbing people off of screens, and technically he's very sound in that respect, I think athletically, he's just going to be overwhelmed by anybody. In fact, I think some of the fives in the NBA won't have problems chasing him around. It'll be more about kind of instinctually, are they kind of willing to get out that far away from the rim, which I think Markkanen's probably going to have to play the four because of the defensive weaknesses that we'll get to here shortly.
That's what I was going to say is it'll be an interesting question how much he can play the five versus how much he can play the four, because I think if he plays the five, you have a lot more difficulty following him around with a center. And then if you do follow him around with a center, his gravity is so much more important because, like, most teams, that's their only rim protector.
Yeah, game changer.
And if that guy gets away,
But
I think you're probably right that a lot of his defensive issues may cause some significant problems there. I think for me, I totally understand the criticisms of his his offense in terms of where you're coming from. I just think that the importance of his shooting at his position is so unique that it's going to be really hard for him to not find a place, at least somewhere in the NBA. And maybe that's more of an argument for him having a really high floor as a prospect, but and less of a ceiling. But those guys to me are super valuable either way.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And honestly, I waffle back and forth almost every day about kind of where his ceiling lies and how he'll be able to be effectively used at the NBA. And a lot, like we said, depends on his defense. So let's get there. Defensive strengths, defensive weaknesses. For strengths, the main ones that I have are his intelligence. His effort is pretty decent, although he expends a lot of effort on offense. So it doesn't always look necessarily like he's going a million miles an hour, like chopping his feet, you know, kind of that kind of thing. But yeah. I think that his effort is there. He knows the scheme so well. Like he's making all the right choices as far as that's concerned. And I think that he shows some ability to slide laterally. Maybe that's just an effort thing and kind of a technique thing. I don't know if he'll be able to do it in corralling NBA guards, but I think he can slide a little bit on the perimeter when he's in kind of an ideal situation for him. Are there any other defensive strengths that I missed, or maybe you can elaborate on some things that I mentioned there?
So I'll hit on the last one, which is the lateral mobility thing. I think that a lot of people maybe underplay his ability to do that. I don't think he's super great at it, but I remember watching him in the first game of the season against Michigan State and thinking when he stepped out on the perimeter, like, man, this guy can move pretty well.
Yeah.
For a guy who's a 7-footer and who is rumored not to be able to move particularly well. And I think he gets into a stance. I think he slides his feet. I think if you're a big man, if you're going to play the power forward spot, you certainly have to be able to switch on to smaller players at sometimes and be able to do that. And I think for small stretches, he probably can. He's not going to be able to do it for like 20 minutes, seconds of a shot clock or whatever, 15 seconds maybe. But like for the last 10, I think he can probably hold his own enough.
Yeah.
To be able to do that. And that's important given that his rim protection, which we'll get to in a second, is basically non-existent. So I think the lateral mobility point is probably the most important one, just because I do think it's pretty reasonable and he does it okay in terms of it. And I will say this, for as much as we're inevitably going to criticize Markkanen's defensive abilities because they're bad and they rightfully should be criticized.
Yeah.
It's noticeable that Arizona still has like a top 30 defense in college basketball, even with him on the floor basically all the time.
Yeah.
So even if he's on your team and he's not a very good defender, like your team defense can still, I think, be okay with him out there. Now, maybe that's a little less true in the NBA where teams will attack mismatches more often, especially as teams get into the playoffs. But I do think it's noticeable that Arizona's team defense is okay, even though Markkanen is pretty widely regarded as not a great individual defender.
Yeah.
Yo, everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
I think that there, because of some injuries, they've had to go a little more size, a little less skill, and they're playing very defensive-oriented on the perimeter, and they play Markkanen, obviously, a lot with Ristich. And what's his name? Who's the other long-rangy Cam?
The big?
Yeah.
Comanche?
Yeah, Comanche. Thank you. I think that he's pretty much surrounded by, like, four pretty good defenders almost at all times. So
yeah.
I don't know how much I buy into that.
Well, and Sean Miller is like a super good defensive coach. Right. Arizona is historically a really good defensive program.
Yeah. So I'm not sure how much I buy into that. Although if you're going to make a case, if you're going to be his defense attorney, that's definitely something you want to bring up. Oh, all right. So let's get into the weaknesses. I'll let you start here. You mentioned that rim protection is pretty much non-existent.
Yeah, so when I wrote this down, I kind of had lateral mobility listed as a strength and then like everything else listed as a weakness. he's an okay defensive rebounder. I think his defensive rebound rate is pretty good for somebody who's a big man. I think it's around 20% or so. It's a little lower than you'd like it to be, but given his size, it's fine. The obvious question is he's got pretty average length, so I'm not sure that it's going to translate in. Some of those physical issues we identified on the offensive end probably will come into play.
Yeah.
They're on defense. The biggest concern, I think, which we have alluded to already is that he basically blocks zero shots. Some of that
almost
is probably
literally that, zero shots, right?
Yeah, no, it's 0.6 blocks per 40 minutes. He has a 1.5% block rate. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even like he's a complimentary rim protector. Like, Josh Jackson, Jason Tatum, Jonathan Isaac, all of those dudes have block rates that are at least above 3% or 4%. And Markkanen just, like, doesn't do it at all. Now, yeah. I probably haven't watched enough to say that, like, that's because he's incapable of putting himself in between the ball and the basket. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't really jump particularly well. He doesn't play above the rim very often. And I think that there are some real questions about if he'll be able to add any rim protection at the NBA level. And I think that's important because ideally his biggest offensive mismatches are going to come if he plays center than if he plays power forward. But if he doesn't offer anything at the rim, it's a lot harder to play him at the center position unless you have a power forward who can protect the rim. And those are, you know, not super common.
Yeah, for guys that don't have the block rates that are really high, you know, you often look for positioning. A lot of time they're not great leapers, but kind of just in verticality, they bother a lot of shots, you know, their positioning, that kind of thing. Markkanen, I was looking for those specific things, and he does all of them actually pretty poorly. He rarely gets off the ground. His contests are a little weak, I think, just because maybe his length isn't where you'd want it to be. And then I think the other very large weakness on defense that he's going to give you, which is also a weakness on offense that I didn't really say, but his strength, regardless of how soundly and how quickly he turns to find the man that he's supposed to be boxing out and how well, you know, he kind of does it in theory, his strength is so poor. He gets pushed off his spot more easily than almost anyone that of these NBA prospects that I'm watching. And it's actually kind of really concerning. I don't think that he's going to give you much rebounding in the NBA at all. And I think if he has to be a help defender, I think it almost gets worse. Like I think it's like you kind of smell blood in the water. And if he's going to have to be helping off, you know, from the weak side when he's playing the four, I think that the offensive rebounds that they're going to be giving up are going to be like insane. And now I don't know. He looks kind of cut, you know, like his shoulders and his arms. Like he doesn't look like a small kid. I didn't list exactly what he weighs here, but I don't know if it's a balance issue, if it's like a flexibility thing, if it's like a lower, I suspect it's like a lower body strength kind of thing, but he gets pushed
off
the
spot.
Yeah. So easily. It's pretty concerning. All right. Is there anything else there? I want to make sure that we're really measured in how we're like putting forth all of these strengths and weaknesses, because obviously some matter a lot more than others, and we'll get to that as we do our projections. But are there any other weaknesses there, or do you want to elaborate on something that I said maybe?
No, I think we're pretty right on. I mean, if you're looking at Markkanen as an overall prospect, you're looking at somebody who's an outlier shooter for a 7-footer who can give you a little bit more than that on offense, but is basically going to give you you know, very little on defense, and your hope is that he can fit into a team defensive scheme okay. And if you're trusting him as a prospect, it is trusting that his shooting ability is going to be so important and so good that that will make him worth having him on the floor.
Yeah, I like that. Obviously, we see some fives in the NBA right now who are so good that you can have a couple leaky perimeter players. And then obviously Markkanen is going to get, I think, kind of being at the four right now in this period in the NBA where there are still some unskilled fours, some fours that don't do a ton for you offensively. There are going to be some matchups for him. They're going to be really favorable where his defense maybe not won't matter as much, you know, although like you said at the beginning, NBAs love to go after mismatches and they'll just put him in pick and roll like crazy probably and make him do that. All right. So you recapped him, summarized him, I think, pretty well. So where do you think he's going to be drafted, and where do you think you would draft him?
Sure. I think he is pretty definitely going to get drafted in the top 10, probably 5 to 10 or 6, I guess 6 to 10 most likely. And I think that's probably where he should get drafted at the end of the day.
I think, well, I guess I don't know. I think that obviously right now, well, this isn't something that I think. Right now, a lot of people have him in that top 10 range, like you're saying, like 7, 8, 9, something like that. But I think that as the draft gets closer and more people watch, not that he hasn't been a big name since the beginning, but people just get to sit down in the film room and really break him down. I think that unless there is a team there, you know, Sacramento Kings, somebody whose owner falls in love with it, and the decision comes from, you know, all the way upstairs. I think that most basketball decision makers are probably going to let him slide a little bit further than we think. That's kind of my gut feeling. I know that there are often prospects in his similar mold that have big question marks on one side of the ball. You know, if you're a big and you have a question mark on defense,
sure.
I think you tend to slide a little bit. If you're a guard and you have question marks on offense, you tend to slide a little bit more. I personally would take him somewhere in the 11 to 15 range. That's where I have him. But I don't hate anybody for taking him above that. I really struggle to see how he's going to be a positive starting player in the NBA unless he's just on a really, really bad team. But, you know, I'm rooting for the kid. Obviously, you know, I hope that all these guys do really well, but that's just kind of my opinion. So what are you going to be looking – sorry, go ahead.
I don't think 11 to 15 is crazy. It's just to me, like, how many guys can really rise above him in my mind. Like, I think the top 13 picks are kind of set in my thinking. So like maybe Miles Bridges, Justin Patton, and Robert Williams get above him, but it's hard for me to imagine him slipping any more than that. And I also think that there are some teams in the lottery, where I think he's a pretty reasonable fit. So I think he's a pretty reasonable fit in Minnesota as a power forward next to Towns, where Towns can maybe make up for a lot of his defensive shortcomings, at least hopefully, once he moves to the center spot.
Yeah, if Tibbs is willing to play him at the freaking five.
Yeah, like if Tibbs is willing to play Cat at the five and you can play Markkanen at the four, like Markkanen gives that team something they badly need in terms of shooting. And if anybody's going to figure out how to at least make him a competent team defender, it's probably Tibbs.
Yeah, that's fair.
You mentioned Sacramento. I've had him going to Sacramento in a mock draft or two, and I think it's like silly to give them more big men. It's less silly maybe now that they traded Boogie. But, like, let's say you put him as the four next to, like, Willie Cauley-Stein, who's a really, really good defender.
Yeah.
Like, then maybe you're okay.
Yeah, I think that's actually so best I case think scenario that there for him, teams... which is kind of insane saying that going to the Kings is the best case scenario for anybody.
Yeah. But I think that there are some teams who will probably have picks in the top 10 where I think he's a pretty okay fit that may slip him, see him not slip as far as maybe you think he will.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think 11 to 15 is as crazy as people kind of look over his tape.
Okay, so what are the things that, as he gets deep in the tournament, or, you know, just in the conference tournament play, that you're going to be looking for that might change your opinion on him, you know, either way, up or down?
Well, you want to see, obviously, like, any sort of defensive improvement from him once he gets into playing some of these more competent teams. Any level of defensive improvement is nice because of where his baseline is at right now. I think that if he can pass a little bit more and maybe drive against those closeouts a little bit better, I think that that is something that could be intriguing. And then one position where I think he's interesting, and he hasn't done it a lot yet, and he may not do it at all this year, is Arizona's occasionally used him as the ball handler in like 4 or 5 pick and rolls.
Hmm.
And I think that that could be really interesting with him because I think he can shoot off the dribble there. And that's just another set where his abilities is kind of an outlier.
Yeah.
Could make him kind of a unique player. And I don't know that they're going to do that a lot. Like, I think they've done that probably less than 15 times this year.
Yeah, yeah, sounds
Synergy
very,
says
very...
16 possessions.
Yeah, okay.
But it's something like Indiana does it occasionally with Thomas Bryant. And it's like, you can tell that there's a possibility that in the future he will be able to do this thing. And that's an interesting application of his skill set.
Yeah, I wonder if as we get deeper in the season and he's playing, like you said, better teams in conference play and in the NCAA tournament, if he is going to look really bad just because, like I said before, I think that he's surrounded by a lot of defensive first players and he is, you know, by far their best offensive player. If he's just going to get keyed on so much, he's going to be guarded by the other team's best, you know, 3 through 5 defender. And, you know, he might just kind of be suffocated out. And maybe if you're a bad evaluator at the NBA level or if you're Vivek Ranadive or whatever, and, you know, you don't see him perform really well at those stages, he might slide a little bit. But yeah, like you said, if I think the thing that I'm going to be looking for the most is creation. If he can attack closeouts, if he's able to shake free a little bit because of, I think, the kind of defense that he's going to see later in the season, if he's able to shake free at all, show a little bit more at the rim, finishing through contact, which I think is kind of a weakness of his that we didn't talk about too much, because he actually, he takes like 45% of his shots from three, but, you know, the other 55% aren't long twos. He actually doesn't take too many long twos. A lot of his stuff is at the rim. If he can finish there at all with any kind of consistency as people are forcing him off the three-point line, then I personally become a lot higher on him because I think that's kind of a weakness right now. All right, we just spent a ton of time on Lauri Markkanen. That will be, I think, for everybody listening, enough Markkanen to last them until almost up until the draft, until I go in on him again, probably when we get there. Let's go to Miles Bridges, somebody who I think is a little more clear-cut of a prospect.
That's where I'm going to leave us hanging. Chris was generous enough to give me about 2 hours of his time, so if you would reach out to him and thank him for coming on Ode to Odin, I would really, really appreciate it. The rest of our conversation is focused on Miles Bridges, Zach Collins, and Jared Allen, all interesting players on the fringe of their respective tiers, I think, so stay tuned for that one that I'll drop shortly. I want to say thank you for all the iTunes reviews that I've gotten recently. I've given a bunch out recently, too, to the podcast that I love, Inside or Outside of the World of Sports, and I feel much better about asking for your reviews. So thanks again, and if you haven't, please do so. They help so much. Per usual, hit me up on Twitter at Ode2Odin and via email with suggestions, critiques, whatever, at Ode2OdinPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening. Have a good one.
There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to Geico than saving you money, Geico also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the Geico app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite.
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you Geico has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while Geico could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, Geico has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than Geico. Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
And now, insurance-minded speeches from Geico.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the Geico app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the Geico app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.